Welcome, lovely listeners, to Soul Stirred, stories of growth and the human experience. I'm Emily Garcia.
And I'm Casey Clark.
We will be your guides on this journey. We are so glad you are here.
Each week, we'll come together, sometimes with other incredible thinkers, creators, and adventurers, to generously share stories of self-discovery, recovery, triumph, and what it means to live a life on purpose.
No matter where you are in your own journey, connection is here for you at Soul Stirred.
Settle in, take a deep breath in, and let's inspire each other.
Welcome to Soul Stirred. Welcome back, Soul Stirred listeners. Today, we are here with Marie Jensen. Marie comes to us from Whidbey Island in Washington State, where she and her hubby retired 2 years ago. Marie is a native of Georgia, but she's been gone from there longer than she lived there. She grew up outside of Atlanta. Her career took her to Washington, D.C., then to Denver, Colorado, and to Washington State. She switched her criminal justice career to a communications career, working over 30 years as a communications manager for cities. She is currently a communications consultant for a small city, so that makes her semi-retired. What makes Marie a great communicator is her care for relationships. She makes and keeps friends, including professional peers. She's loyal, but never to a fault. She considers herself an ambassador in personal and professional lives. I love that title. She reached out to Soul Stirred immediately following our first episode and suggested we talk about the trauma that comes along with caring for an aging, ailing, and in Marie's case, a dying parent. Marie's mother passed away just 2 months ago from metastatic melanoma. On many occasions over the last 10 years, Marie and her three siblings rallied around their mom. They came together in October for an early Thanksgiving and returned in December, later when the cancer diagnosis was known, and again the next month to say their goodbyes. Welcome, Marie. We're so happy to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Emily and Casey. I am really glad to be here. My soul is definitely stirred to do this.
Excellent. We're so glad to have you. And what our audience may not know is Marie is one of our very first listeners who connected with an episode and then raised her hand to come on the show and tell her story as it relates to our story and all of the human experience stories that we're sharing here at Soul Stirred. So we're super extra excited to have you here today. Marie, tell us about what in you connected with what we're up to here at Soul Stirred.
Your first episode spoke to me because of your sexual abuse histories and how you faced them, you overcame them. You are amazing women in your careers, mothers, daughters, sisters. I too have a sexual abuse background, and it was refreshing to hear the vibrancy in y'all's voices about dealing with it, not letting it take you down, because it could have. And so that was kind of my first connection. Like, I'm that person too. I overcame it, a lot of help, a lot of years, you know. And so that connected to me, to both of you, instantly. Then the situation that I was in was dealing with my mom, her cancer diagnosis, the inevitable that was coming. And it just struck me, this is trauma that I'm dealing with, that I'm accumulating, that I see my siblings dealing with, and my friends dealing with the care that they're having to give to an ill parent, an old parent, and in my case, what became a dying parent. So my soul was stirred. Yeah. You guys stirred it up. So that's why I reached out.
Well, thank you for letting us stir your soul. And for being here today and bravely sharing your truth with the rest of the world and our listening audience, we appreciate you. And you're absolutely right. Just what you have said so far is a handful of traumatic things.
Yeah.
None of which are your fault, and all of which create an impact that is your responsibility, right? To heal through, to work through, to acknowledge and validate for yourself so that you can get back to being you, the you that you were before you were harmed.
Right.
So talk to us a little bit about who you are and your relationship with your mom. And
so I'm the youngest out of five. We were raised in the Catholic world, and the abuse happened when I was young. I didn't deal with it till I was a middle-aged woman, career woman, mother. And when I shared it, not confronted, just all the evidence and the documentation that I have with my parents, they absolutely did not believe me. Mm-hmm. So I just accepted that that's never going to change. Mm-hmm. But the course that it set for me was I was the outsider kid from then on. Mm-hmm. I think because of the abuse, they knew about it. I know that they knew about it when it was happening, because mm-hmm. they actually sent me away to live with my barely English-speaking Italian grandparents in New York City when I was 4 years old for 6 weeks. So former mm-hmm. investigator, I built the case. I knew that they knew. So fast forward into my married life, my 40s, my 50s, every time I would come home and visit, I just was always the outsider. And then my mom took a really horrible fall in August of 2020. My dad had passed by then. And the level of care that like the siblings just had to rally to give, it just became hard for me to give it my all sometimes mm-hmm. because she never believed the worst thing that happened to me. Mm. So
yeah. Needing to turn around.
Stepped up. Yeah, I did it. I did what was needed. But the reason I reached out to you all was because this was like a new trauma camp for me. Mm. Just the level of care, her anger, her choices she made about how she was going to handle her health, you know, the past year of her life, mm-hmm. all of that just brought up a lot of trauma feelings for me. My mom made it hard to love her. So, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And it also sounds like she wasn't equipped, I'll say, to give you the love you needed during your most vulnerable time.
Right.
And now here she is during her most vulnerable time. And of course, as the universe would have it, you have to be loving with her in spite of, yes. I'm sure, a whole batch of feelings that were inside yes. of you from when you were a kid.
Right.
Yeah.
I noticed looking back, so after her fall in 2020, she moved in with my oldest sister for 6+ months, and it was time that she needed to move out. Mm-hmm. So my husband and I went down there in February of 21 and basically moved her out of my sister's house, set her up in a house that my sister owned. And I know it just wasn't what my mom thought her life was going to be, but there were consequences to that fall that she took. And I believe alcohol was involved, and it broke her body, and it changed her trajectory for the rest of her life. And she had a lot of level of care that was required. And I came down, my pattern was to come down once a year or as needed. But the longest I stayed with her was for a month in February of 2020. That was a shocker of a trip. I did not know the level of pain meds my mom was taking. I was not aware of the drinking that was going on. No one told me. And I remember feeling very isolated and just thinking, how am I going to manage this on top of you never believed me about the abuse?
Yeah.
And just trying to stay away from the triggers. But over the years, going back and visiting every year, I got stronger and I could manage better, and I knew I was prepared better, and I didn't engage in some of the behaviors. I know I was able to do that. I worry about the trauma my siblings carry with it. But it was, like I said, my mom didn't make things easy sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like really not, in a really complex yeah. way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's remarkable that you have had it at the time, or I don't know if you've come to this awareness since then, but that you were able to see as it was happening, what was happening. Like, I see you suffering and numbing, and I also see me suffering. based on the past. And so how are we going to navigate this relationship together now, given all of that is happening in between us? Say more about that if you can.
To say the relationship was distant, and it always had been, that part had never changed. Mm-hmm. My mom, her career and education was in nursing. She wasn't a nurturing type mother. And I'll speak for myself, for me. And deep down, all the weeks and days and hours, I felt myself just wanting her to say it and mean it. And I didn't get it. And I should have known that I wasn't going to get it, because she wasn't capable. That's who she was. So a lot of the last few months' experience with all this has really taught me acceptance. And I did a lot of journaling and mantras. Like, I just needed to accept a lot of things, that the diagnosis was, she wasn't going to get better. That she wasn't going to say she really, really, really loved me. Yeah, there was just a lot of things I just had to accept just to get through that.
Yeah. It would be ideal if a parent like your mom, if at the end of her life, she could go, you know, I was wrong and I've hurt you. Yeah. And there's so many people in the world that just are in such denial. And it sounds like she was in such denial, and a part of her knew what the truth was, which is why she was drinking so much. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you can deny it logically, but you know what you have put your child through in your core, you know. And it sounds like, for you, you know, we have these different parts of us. We have the parts that want to protect us. All of our parts want to protect us. But then at our core, there's your true self. And your true self led you to the place of going, I have to accept this. What do you think helped you to see that you ultimately just had to go, I have to journal and mantra and do whatever I can to accept what's going on?
I think being on a 30-year counseling plan helped. I have been with the same counselor for almost 20 years. He knows me inside and out. But honestly, I think I've built a pretty solid toolkit. And there were a lot of unhealthy relationships with siblings, among siblings, parents and siblings, parent and parent. Like, and I'm sure my family isn't, you know, as different as many out there. But I think just being hell bent on not letting the sexual abuse trauma like interfere with what was probably the most traumatic experience I've had since my divorce. Just a whole lot of unhealthy things happening. And I would just walk in and just say, this is not going to be me. I'm not going to do this. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to lose my sanity over what my mom's needs are right now. So that was kind of my motive, stay focused that way.
You said something really important a minute ago too, that I want to acknowledge for you and anybody else with a similar story that might be listening. I don't know if you've connected it up this way, but I'm about to. In order to get to acceptance with her, and then I make up that so that you could be loving and kind with her, you had to acknowledge the truth of your story for yourself. You had to believe you.
Yeah.
And you had to let your system, your whole body know, this is real and it happened to me. And even though I'm never going to get the acknowledgement and validation I need from the people I needed it from, it's my job now to give it to myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was also motivated just to kind of reconnect and stay connected with my siblings. We weren't that close growing up. And right now we live in different states. So I didn't, you know, one of my mantras was, don't add to the drama.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
My mom was, I think when I reached out to you, I just said it was kind of a shit show.
Yeah.
And I don't mean any disrespect to my siblings or my mom, but that's what it felt like. If you were an outsider and just mm-hmm. like were drone footage, you know, over the whole scene, you would think, wow. And to some extent, my mom was like the ringmaster. Mm. So I was also motivated by just not adding to the drama and caring, being gracious with my brothers and sisters. And, you know, my one sister, being the power of attorney, she had a lot of responsibility, mm-hmm. a lot of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And she was the primary caregiver for, you know, over 10 years after my dad died. Mm. So I just never wanted to, not appreciate what she's had to go through. Mm-hmm. So, and my other sister would come up from where she lives and stay with my mom for weeks at a time to give the oldest sister a break. And, mm-hmm. You know, the system worked, and considering, I call it the final week when we all came down there to say goodbye, mm-hmm. it was intense. Home hospice was intense. And, I'm just in awe of how we all managed that week together for not having like long-term close relationships. Mm-hmm. So I'll always be in awe of that.
Sibling relationships are so important, especially surrounding the loss of a parent, whether that's because they're declining in life or actually dying and leaving this level of consciousness. I honestly am so grateful for my own siblings and don't know how we would have traversed those kind of hard things without each other. But tell us a little bit, give us a taste of what the last intense week was like.
My mom went to the hospital in December because of pain. Turns out it was cancer, but they didn't know what kind. And the day that she was released, my siblings went to pick her up, and they weren't a block away from the hospital, and a drunk driver hit them. I'm telling you, a shit show.
You can't make this up.
Yeah. So everybody's, you know, ambulanced back to the hospital. They get all checked out. So they get mom home, and that's when I booked my flight mm-hmm. and just said, I'm coming. You need my help. And so I stayed from the 15th of December, like all the way through January 3rd. I stayed with mom in her house, and the day I flew out was the metastatic melanoma diagnosis. So then we had something to deal with. And I think a lot of the trauma I was feeling at the time was just the unknown. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it? What's making her have so much, you know? And then you get the answer, okay, well then, like, what's that going to do to her? Mm-hmm. Well, she's got to have treatment. Well, what's that going to do to her? Like, mm-hmm. just so much trauma around the not knowing. So I come back home, and 2 days later I get the call, you know, you need to come back and say your goodbyes. Mm-hmm. So she again was in the hospital because she had lost the ability to speak. So when my husband and I flew back, I stayed that first night in the hospital with her. And, you know, nobody gets any sleep in a hospital chair or a mm-hmm. hospital bed for that matter. And that was on a Sunday. She was released on a Tuesday, got her set up for home hospice. And she passed Wednesday night. So it was fast.
Quick. Yeah.
I think I said to you all earlier that it wasn't her death that saddens me, but boy, her suffering mm-hmm. sure does. Mm-hmm. And I know that her body and mind did not know what was going on the last hours, but it was bizarre and beautiful at the same time, but brutal. Brutal to watch it and hear it and be scared shitless. Like, mm-hmm. is that it? Is that it? So I think
there is something. There's something so bittersweet, for lack of a better term, about those moments just prior to losing someone, just prior to them passing over, and then just after, because you are watching, you can be watching, and it sounds like you were pain. It looked so painful, and like she was starting to release from it to go to be at peace.
I try to find comfort for my mom, and that I know she appreciated all of us being there. And I think we were all comforted knowing we were all in it together. Yeah.
Bizarre and beautiful and brutal.
Yeah, she was having memories. And, you know, we, like, my sisters and I were like, what is she talking about? And then, like, somebody would remember. I think we said the Lord's Prayer, you know, 50 times. She wanted me to recite lyrics to a Bing Crosby song. And she joked one time with my sister. I mean, yeah. So bizarre and beautiful.
Bizarre and beautiful is the exact right way to say it.
Yeah. What will you remember about your mom?
My mom was feisty as hell. She had a couple of, you know, mom-isms. One was, you don't have to like someone, you just have to be civil to them. That's pretty good advice. And you can do anything for a year. That was another. All right. You know, like if one of us had crappy jobs, she's like, just hang in there for a year. My mom was gracious to friends, very gracious to her friends.
It sounds like that is one of the things that you took from her, because you also are gracious to your friends, that you are loyal, but not to a fault.
Right. At least that's what I tell myself.
Yeah. I believe it's true.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Gracious and fierce, and it also sounds like strong. Your mom?
Yeah.
I'm looking up strength from the guidance that's like, you can do anything for a year. She was like maybe one of those women that, like us, we can do hard things.
Yeah, I think so. I try to step out sometimes and think, although I don't know a lot about my mom's upbringing, you know, her father was an alcoholic. They lived in New York City. She met my dad at 15, married at 19, had the first three kids in three different states, and then the last two in Georgia. She had all of us by the time she was 27. She, you know, worked a nursing career, emergency rooms. I mean, so.
Wow, good for her.
I know it wasn't easy for her.
Yeah. What that says to me is it conjures up compassion for her, because she had to develop her identity as a mom before she was even done developing her identity as a person.
Yeah, good point.
You know, and it also sounds like she was not everything you needed as a child. And I know it's also true for all of us who have kids. None of us can be.
Yeah.
Everything our children need the moment that they need them, regardless of how loving we are and how much we love them. And I also know there's some threads that we could pull on and talk about. You mentioned at the top about being Catholic.
Yeah.
And I know in my own story, I can relate to having been raised Catholic and the shame that that means we were sometimes parented with and brought up with and taught how to be good humans through. And there was, you know, just pervasive sexual abuse, as we know, when we were all young girls. So many people who have been impacted by that and then not known what to do with it or how to expose it. And because of the, again, the shame that our moms and our families carry, it's like, don't talk about it. Keep it secret, or it didn't really happen. And that can be almost as damaging as the abuse itself.
Right.
To be told to keep quiet and to be minimized like that. I'm curious how it was for you. I know for me, that made me carry with me like, oh, I guess it didn't matter that much. It didn't really affect me. Nobody seems to care that this happened.
I don't think I was. Yeah. I mean, it happened to me when I was very young, four. And I didn't personally acknowledge it till I think after I was married. I kind of knew. I just kind of knew. But one reason I reached out to you all is just, I'm just searching for words to put to this trauma around my mom's death, because it took me the longest time to put the word shame to the sexual abuse. And so now I'm like, okay, well, I got that word. Now, what is it for this? Because I can say it was traumatic. It was traumatizing, but like, I'm looking for something more than that word. So I didn't say anything till I was 40, but no one said, keep it quiet. No one said, don't ever talk about it. I just knew not to bring it up. And I knew I just knew that they weren't going to accept it. And that's exactly how it played out. And it just made for a very tough relationship with both my parents. Mm-hmm. So
there are unspoken rules within a family.
Yep. Definitely unspoken rules. Mm-hmm. So, and I just didn't play by my parents' rules, you know, but I did exactly what they did. I moved away from my parents. I mean, as far away as I could, they did the same thing. But I just felt like I was never forgiven for that.
You know, the thing that I have learned about sexual abuse is that it is a pattern and it happens in generations. And I can say in my family, I was abused. My mom was abused. My grandma was abused. And for my mom and my grandma, it was that sort of thing, like brush it under the rug. Let's not talk about it. Just move on. And, you know, it's sort of at that point in history, it was like, you need a man in order to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. So you got to just deal with it. This is just part of life. Mm-hmm. And so when that's the pattern and families learn, like you were saying, it's the unspoken rule in the family, even as a 4-year-old, you know, I can't say anything because it's not going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And then when you're an adult and you speak up, you're breaking the pattern in the family, and people don't want that pattern broken. They just want to go on being like, we do what we do and you're okay. Just move along. But by breaking the pattern, that's literally it. You have decided I am no longer going to participate in this secret. Mm-hmm. And the secret is what creates the shame. Mm-hmm. That wasn't your shame to carry.
Right. Yeah. But even after I shared it with them, it still was never talked about again, ever. So. Yeah.
And I imagine this is relative to what you're describing now as the traumatic experience of the loss of her that you're longing to name in some way. Tell us a little bit more about that, like what it's been like for you specifically around the loss, and maybe, maybe not, we can help you name it.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the loss is like has layers. So the simple loss is, oh, I can't send Mama St. Patrick's Day card. Like, oh, you know, I usually call her when I'm home from a trip or when I travel, I always send postcards. So like that loss is gone. You know, part of me feels like I should feel like there's more of a loss. But because we just weren't close, I don't feel as much loss maybe as I think I should, if that makes sense.
Well, you know, they say your feelings are your truth, and it's futile to judge them.
Yeah.
You don't have to feel guilty for how you feel or how you don't feel. You just get to feel and let that be part of how you are.
Yeah. I don't feel guilty about not feeling the loss. It's how I feel about my dad as well. I think the hardest part for me is to, I don't know, think about the positives. I just don't have a lot to draw on. I wish I did.
It's the irony of loving someone, and you know, this is your mom and that was your dad and you love them, and yet the truth of how they were with you and who they were to you doesn't go away just because they died. And so it's layered. Like, yes, I loved them, but she wasn't good to me. And she didn't stand up for me, and she didn't advocate for me, and she didn't protect me. And or whatever those things are. I'm just giving you the words that I would use. And so it's a layered thing, and I don't think there's one word to describe it. There are many words.
Yeah.
I know it can also be true when a child of any age loses a parent, there's the feelings Emily just went through. She didn't protect me, nurture me, guide me, keep me safe, love me the way that I needed. And now she never will.
Right.
Because now she's gone. And so there's a child inside of all of us that we grieve for. Like, at least when you were alive, I had hope that those needs could still get met in some small way. Now that you're gone, they're going to remain unmet.
Right.
Unless I learn how to meet them for myself. And admittedly, that's a harder thing, right? Yeah. It's just a harder thing to give yourself the love that you needed and wanted from a parent.
Right. Sometimes you just want to be taken care of.
Yeah. And held and loved. Yeah.
Are there things that you have learned as an adult, and particularly since you made that disclosure when you were 40, that have been about reparenting yourself, that you've been like, hey, what does Marie need? And what am I going to do for her?
I'd say that talking about it, I remember when I was dating my now husband. I told him about kind of what I carried, and I told him what had happened. And I said, cause you just need to know I trigger easily. And, damn if that guy didn't say, well, I respect you more now than I ever did.
Oh.
And so I think for me, it's always been about being authentic, because I just grew up in a pretend world with, you know, a family that was all about the outward appearances. And I think that was the greatest, and growing up and visiting, you know, going home for holiday visits and stuff, I think the friction was because I wanted to talk about the truths. I mean, just simple things, but there's just so many topics you couldn't talk about because, you know, it would be offensive politically or religiously or I don't know, morally. I think for me, I'm authentic in my professional job. I mean, what you get is what you get. And personally too, I don't hide from the core of me. I hope I answered that question. Yeah.
You did it great. I love it so much. And it makes me want to go raise your hand if you're that person in your family who couldn't keep the unspoken truths quiet.
Right.
Like, yeah. I see you and I hear you, and me too.
Right.
Can we all just please talk about the thing that nobody's talking about, that is so obvious to all of us, that's happening in the room right now?
Yeah. And, you know, one of those things was my mom's drinking.
Mm.
When I went down in February of 21, and I was just shocked. Mm-hmm. So not only is she on pain meds, she's mixing it. And I was stunned, and I would try to tell my sisters, and they're like, yeah, we know. That's what she does.
Mm-hmm.
That's her choice. And I'm like, could have warned me. You could have dropped a hint. I just was stunned. So again, one of those things that could easily been talked about. And Emily, a little bit to something that I did when I went back in December and stayed over Christmas and through New Year's, I actually texted the family members. So my siblings and their kids, just with a daily update. Because that was the professional communicator in me. But that was also a way of saying, mom's in good hands, you know, here's what you need to know. I didn't give away any secrets, but it was just important for me for people to know what was happening, because everybody's just lives in different places. So.
That's beautiful. I want to take a step back, because when you were talking about when you met your now husband and you were dating and you were like, I'm going to show up authentically. I want you to understand I get triggered easily. And he was like, I respect you so much more because of that. I'm curious, what was it that led you to be honest and attract someone? We attract people who we need in our lives, and oftentimes we will attract someone who recreates the pattern we know, or somehow we know something bigger and we attract someone who's healthy. So what led you to that moment with him?
I remember first dating him and telling friends and family, man, I met this guy. He is so certain about himself. Like, he was certain. He made decisions. He wasn't egotistical, but he just was very certain about him as a professional and as a dad. And I think I just recognized if I'm going to stay in this and work it and make it happen, he's got to know this about me. And he needs to know, like, just how much counseling I get about it. And that I just trigger easily. I think that was my biggest fear, was he wasn't going to know, well, God, what was that about? You know, and a big trigger for me was betrayal, right? My parents didn't protect me. A whole lot of other levels of betrayal. And I just think I put it out there, like, don't do it.
Yeah.
It'll be, if you betray me, it'll be a deal breaker.
And he hasn't.
No.
Good man. Good man.
Yeah. It's pretty refreshing to show up in a new relationship and just put it all out on the table. Like, here it is. If you can do it, take it. And if you can't, leave it. Like, I'm better off.
I mean, and we were both newly divorced. And, you know, if you had a second chance, you definitely know what you don't want in the next relationship. So I think that was part of my motive. Like, I'm not, like, you're going to need to understand this about me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and it speaks so beautifully also to the gift of relationship.
Yeah.
That we often get through relationships, the things that we're not yet able to do or be ourselves. What I hear you saying is he came in as such a confident and authentic speaker of his own truth that it inspired you to be confident and authentic in yours too. Regardless of the content of the story.
I'll correct that a little bit. I think
please do.
I came in and set the standard for truth.
Yeah. Well, good for you. All right. Yeah. You get to have all the credit. Don't let me take any of that away. What do you notice about yourself as far as being a person who triggers easily now that some of your truth has surfaced?
Well, I know the usual triggers. And then, like, this wasn't a trigger about the sexual abuse, but we went to a St. Patrick's Day dinner party Saturday. And, you know, my mom was Irish. And I just was moody during the whole thing. And I thought, what? Like, you know, husband kept saying, are you all right? And I'm like, I'm just emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next day I'm like, well, of course you are. Because your mom was, like, you got the Irish lineage and the heritage. You always sent her St. Patrick's Day cards. Like, of course you are. Yeah. So I think I know the usual suspects. And I'll just say, okay, like, I'm triggered right now. So give me space. Let me process it. But there's also always going to be the ones that I never know are coming.
Yeah. Well, you're grieving, you know?
Yeah. So is grief the same as trauma? Is grief part of trauma? Like,
great
what?
Question. Yeah.
There's definitely overlap. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that trauma is always grief and grief is always trauma, but there's definitely this amount of overlap, like a Venn diagram, like grief and trauma, but they're here, you know, just that little bit of space. And the thing about grief is when you're rewiring your brain and everything, all of the firsts are a big deal. And so your first St. Patty's Day without your mom, you may not realize it's going to be a big deal until you're in it. And then you're like, oh, I'm feeling it. And it's almost like the opposite of trauma in that moment when you acknowledge it and go, oh, I'm feeling it, and you allow it to be released. Like, I need to be sad right now because allowing whatever is happening is the thing that prevents you from holding the trauma in your body. And actually, as I'm saying that, I want to bring up something that you said. You wrote this, that the trauma has felt like a lump that you can't really identify in your body. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, I just feel like I'll just look down and go, I know you're in there. And sometimes it feels it's over here or over here. Sometimes it feels like a coat, like, you know, it's a light sweater or it's a heavy coat. And that's just kind of how I know I'm all right. Something's, I got to figure this out today. And I'm not saying I want to get rid of it, because I don't think you ever get rid of this kind of trauma, but I just don't want it to affect, you know, kind of dominate my life like the sexual abuse trauma did for so many years.
Right.
I don't want it to fester. Is that a word?
Yeah. It seems like rather than it being a coat that you have to wear, maybe it's a handkerchief you put in your pocket.
Yeah.
And you can put it away and take it out when you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember coming back from the funeral, the first probably 3 or 4 days. And let me tell you, we live in a very beautiful house my husband designed. I walked into the door. It was like 11:30 at night. I just dropped to my knees because our house is beautiful and it's loving and it's healthy. And I just did not have that for 6 weeks. And I missed it. I so missed the house and the bed and all the comforts that came along with it.
Such a beautiful testament to creating the life
yes.
that you wanted and needed. And you did that for yourself, in spite of the people who were in your family of origin not being able to give those things to you.
Right.
You, somewhere along the way, found out what you needed and then built your life to be it. That's incredible.
Thank
it's
you.
Resilient and it's courageous and it's incredible. Yeah.
There is something about getting to the end when you have lost someone and it comes with the whole variety of feelings that we were talking about mm-hmm. and it's painful and, you know, people don't want to say this, but there can be a little bit of relief and there's, you know, all the stuff. And then you come back into your own space. And after having experienced the trauma that you did mm-hmm. walking into your home where I'm sure you've always known, I love this home, but you have this perspective after having the opposite experience.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You come home and go, I've created this. Thank you so much. Thank you, Marie, for creating this.
Yeah. It's very healing here.
Yeah. What a special experience. Well, as we get to the end, is there anything that we didn't ask that you want to make sure we say or that our listeners know?
No, I just know there's so many, even friends, but people out there my age in our 60s who are caring for our elderly parents on so many levels. And I just, my wish for all of you is that you recognize, I know you know it's difficult, but that you recognize there's going to be trauma with it. Mm-hmm. And to know the signs, to manage the signs, to truly do some self-care. Mm-hmm. I came equipped with that. I don't know that my siblings did. And so I do worry what they're carrying with them. And I mean, I'll do my part to reach out for them. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel alone in this trauma experience with my mom's death. I had, you know, siblings and husband and son, and I just don't want people to feel alone.
Yeah. Well, you helped with that today.
Thank you. Know? I hope so.
There's lots of people out there in the world who will relate to various parts of this story. And now today they'll feel a little bit less alone in their story because of you coming here and sharing yours.
Appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah.
That was my hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished.
Good deal.
Well, thank you for being here today.
Thank you both.
Yeah, you have made the community and made our community a little better by sharing something that's so important and being authentic like you always are.
Authentic and tender.
Yes.
It feels in this space here today. I hope that they can feel that when they're listening too. Yeah. Thanks,
Marie.
Well,
Soul-Stirred listeners, thank you for joining us today. And if you found value in this episode and there is anything that resonated that you think someone else needs to hear, please share it. That's the best way that new people can hear the important things that we're talking about. So thank you for listening and thank you to Marie.
My pleasure, honestly.
And if you, like Marie, connect up with something you've heard today or on any other Soul-Stirred episode, write to us at soulstirredpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you and perhaps highlight you and your story on the show.
All
Take
right,
good care
everyone.
Of yourselves.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of Soul Stirred, Stories of Growth and the Human Experience. We hope our stories have touched your heart and sparked reflections in your own journey.
Remember, while we are therapists, we are not your therapists, and this podcast is not a substitute for therapy. If you find yourself in need of professional support, please don't hesitate to seek it. Your well-being is important, and there are professionals out there who are ready to help.
We encourage you to carry the spirit of growth and connection with you. Life is a continuous journey, and we're honored to be part of yours.
Stay tuned for more captivating stories in the episodes to come. Until then, take care of yourselves and each other.